when I read to begin chapter 39 of Genesis. The story in chapter 39 now returns to Joseph, and it will center upon Joseph throughout most of the rest of the book of Genesis. Chapter 37 had closed with a brief mention of the fact that he had been sold, first of all by his brothers to the Midianites, and then the Midianites took him to Egypt and sold him to a man named Potiphar, who was an Egyptian officer. And the first verse of this chapter 39 refers to these men as Ishmaelites. But this simply indicates again that the two groups, the Midianites and Ishmaelites, were equally synonymous with each other because of intermarriage among these two nations. The Egypt into which Joseph entered was, of course, a very ancient nation already by now. It was a highly civilized and organized empire, yet it was one that had multiple gods. It was very immoral in faith and practice, and yet even today the historical scholars of Egypt are not in agreement about the chronology of the Egyptian rulers. They cannot agree on the dates when all these things happened in Egypt. And it's this chronology that most of the dating of ancient history depends, even as we study about other societies. But there was an Egyptian priest of the 3rd century B.C. named Manetho, who had the most complete set of king lists. Manetho listed 31 dynasties, or 31 ruling families, giving the years of reign of each king with each dynasty. But it's not clear how many of these that he names were dynasties that ruled in the Upper and Lower Egypt at the same time, and how many of these ruled over the entire kingdom. So it's difficult to know just how many years are involved. The first pharaoh, that word means great house, was Menes, M-E-N-E-S, and he seemed to be the first one to unite the two divisions of Egypt together. And the actual date of Menes' reign has been estimated at various times, all the way from 5500 B.C. to 2000 B.C. But it seems that most of the authorities on Egyptian history date Menes at about 3100 B.C. But there are a group of more modern Egyptian scholars who have reduced the entire time by several hundred years. So the question as to the number and duration of successful Egyptian dynasties has to be regarded as one that's still not settled at this time, and therefore the particular pharaoh and date of Joseph's entry into Egypt is not actually known. Probably most scholars believe that this was during the reign of the Hyksos kings in Egypt. These Hyksos were foreign invaders, probably at least partially of Semitic stock, who came from the east and conquered Egypt, and according to the standard chronology, this was about 1720 B.C. They were also called the Shepherd Kings, and many believe that it was because of their Semitic origin that the rulers of Egypt in Joseph's day treated the children of Israel so well when Jacob and his family moved to Egypt. The Hyksos were expelled from Egypt before Moses' time, so that the pharaoh of the new dynasty knew not Joseph, and soon began to persecute these Hebrew relatives of the Hyksos. This historical background we just given may, in general, be correct, but this should not be regarded as something that's firmly established by the scholars at this time. So in verse 1 of chapter 39 we read, "And Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither." Potiphar, to whom Joseph was sold, was captain of Pharaoh's bodyguard, and also probably in charge of political executions ordered by Pharaoh. He is also called an officer of Pharaoh, the Hebrew word being saris, meaning eunuch or chamberlain. It was evidently customary in ancient pagan countries, beginning with Samaria, to require prominent officers associated closely with the king's court to be castrated, perhaps to ensure a full-hearted devotion to the duties required of them and to minimize the possibility of their taking over the kingdom by military coup to establish a dynasty of their own. Since Potiphar was a married man, it would seem either that Potiphar had consented to such an operation after he was married in order to acquire his high office, or else that his wife had married him for political or financial reasons rather than for normal marital relations. In either case, it is understandable, though hardly justifiable, that she would be prone to adulterous episodes from time to time with this kind of a relationship with her husband. Verses 2 through 4 say, And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him, and he made him overseer over his house, and over all that he had put to his hand. Joseph was a highly intelligent and personable young man, and Potiphar soon recognized his abilities, placing more and more responsibilities on Joseph. And though Joseph did have a natural problem, it seems, from earlier history with the personal pride, and it may have been because of this personal pride that God placed more and more of these difficult and humiliating experiences on Joseph, yet Joseph was indeed of high moral integrity and industry. And the Lord therefore prospered his work for Potiphar in an extraordinary way. It could be seen very readily that here was an unusual person when one looked at Joseph. And it is common for unbelieving employers, though themselves indifferent to God, recognize that earnest Christians make the best employees, and so they desire to have them in their organizations. Qualities like honesty, integrity, faithfulness, sobriety, humility, similar characteristics are genuine assets to an employer, and such are the fruits of Christian faith and obedience. So most societies prefer the qualities that Christians have because these qualities cause the less problems and are the most industrious as far as bringing about good works. And it may be that because of these attributes, upon occasion the employee will have an occasion to talk to his boss, his supervisor, about the true source of his blessings, talk to him some about the type of religious belief that he has, about his Christian life, and then this will be a chance to teach the boss also some of the godly principles. And this seems to have been the case with Joseph and Potiphar, since his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. More and more responsibility did Potiphar turn over to Joseph until everything in the household and business affairs was actually under the oversight of Joseph. And verses 5 and 6 say, "And it came to pass from the time that he had made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand. And he knew not all he had, save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well favored." So Joseph lived up to the calling that he has here. He lived up to the trust put in him. He was a faithful steward. He did a good job. And so Potiphar didn't even know what his possessions were. He didn't even need to know. Joseph took care of it. And so that's our situation now as we bring our lesson to a close today. Next time, Lord willing, we'll begin at this point and continue with the story of Joseph. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.